Hi everyone, this is Jess, and you are about to hear part two of our episode on Dream Girls featuring Matt Schell. Enjoy!
Curtis is now producing lots of other groups. He's like built a whole career off of them.
When they got married, that footage of like the wedding was so weird, wasn't it? Like someone shot that footage 2 weeks afterwards and was like, Mr. Fox.
I'm trying to remember, I kind of remember it, but I don't remember what would have been weird about it.
It just seems so plucked out. I don't know. Like the whole, the photography was different. The like videography was different.
Oh, they probably made it look like, that's
like
video.
A whole movie, I think.
They do that a lot. When they like show someone getting married in olden times, they like suddenly
in the olden days.
Like home movie.
Thinking like, where did this come from? What the hell?
Dina's trying to break into movies, and Curtis wants her to do this movie. This like kind of made me laugh. It's Cleopatra's early years set to the music of today, and I like laughed to myself because in 2006 or 1981, that was like a totally goofy idea that we could all laugh at. But in the age of Hamilton, that's not so funny.
No, I was thinking that too. Like that wasn't
someone won a Pulitzer for doing exactly that in later years.
But Curtis says something very problematic. Cleopatra's 16 throughout most of the movie, and he's like, "You'll always be 16 to me."
16 to me.
Very weird for him to say. Very weird thing. Very weird.
And she says it's bad for so many reasons. She says maybe that's the problem.
Yeah.
He truly loves Dina.
He also says like, I don't like when he says to her like, she's like, I can't play that part. Like, it's just not right for me. And he says, you have to do it. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but he says like, you have to do it for all the little black girls who haven't even been born yet so that they can see like, I can play any role because Dina Jones did it. Like, I feel like that was really manipulative. She doesn't want to do it.
Oh, he obviously is
like, why does that have to fall to her?
It was.
I don't know. Am I wrong? I don't know.
It was extremely manipulative, but that a part of me was going, he's got a point.
Really? Okay. Maybe yeah.
He does have a point, though, actually.
He does have a point, but like she can break other barriers. She doesn't have to do this movie she's uncomfortable with.
But also, the argument is also Cleopatra's mainly played by white women and that she was black. That's another thing, too.
Yep. Like, here's a chance. He's
actually trying to do something. That's what I actually thought you were getting at, that we were laughing at.
No, I just didn't like, I get wanting her to be a role model, but you can do that in a way that she feels good about.
Well, I guess he's thinking, oh, she's a queen.
She's not comfortable with.
You know, Cleopatra's the queen.
She's going to do it. She does it later in the movie.
I thought that was a redeeming moment for his character. Or maybe not a redeeming, if not a redeeming moment, at least one that was like, morally ambiguous enough to agree with them. It was like,
yeah, I guess I can see that. I just felt like at that point I already hated him so much that I was like, he's
thinking about money.
It was
profit. You know what I mean? Like, I don't
think that maybe that's what really bothered me about it. It didn't feel sincere. It felt like a tactic.
I think he was being manipulative. I don't think he truly cares about black little girls. I think he has like deals to get this movie out there, you know? And that's his dream.
Because if he really cared about that, he wouldn't be trying to make Jimmy more palatable.
You disagree, Matthew?
I'm on the fence. You're right. He does try to make Jimmy more palatable. And he does later on try to sell Cece's writing and disco. Mm-hmm. But that was his argument kind of throughout the movie. It was like when these white artists are doing black stuff or black music or gospel and R&B has been stolen and rewritten again. He's like, look, like you just say, like Cleopatra's a part, you know, Liz Taylor, mm-hmm. you know. An actress, and he's like, you've got this chance to play Cleopatra, black woman, beautiful, enthralled Caesar, queen of Egypt or whatever. He's like, you know, you've got a chance for all the black things, the black girls that aren't even born yet. That was one of the parts where I was like really agreeing with him. I was like, damn, yeah, he's right. And even when, and it's the Joe Jackson argument, it's kind of a capitalist argument of, well, you know, look how Joe Jackson paraded and basically turned his sons into this circus act to the point where some say it's part of what drove Michael Jackson insane. But it's like he wouldn't even have been Michael Jackson if it wasn't for Joe. As like slimy as it sounds and as icky as it is, it's like, man, you know, he was doing all those things just for the money, but
don't you think Michael Jackson, you don't think Michael Jackson would have lived his better life if he had just been a person?
Well, that's a different thing he's saying.
That's the argument.
He might have lived a better life.
I just feel like he lived the same life and
done the same thing without Joe. Like, Joe was the devil, but
he was the devil, and look what it looked
like. What came out of that? You know, was it Off the Wall? Was it Thriller? You know, what came out of that? And if
look,
and it doesn't,
and everything that came after,
it doesn't make it okay. It doesn't make it okay. It's just an argument, like Joe Jackson's like, you know, it's like
the I get that. I get all of that. I guess I just don't want to hear it from Curtis because I don't like him.
Exactly.
That's true. That's why I'm like, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. I'm just like, he doesn't care about anyone but himself.
Yeah, I don't want to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's already like lost.
Yeah.
It's so great when the antagonist makes sense. And even if they make sense, the point of view, it's like that adds up. And I like that. But now I'm rooting for the bad guy.
It is great when the antagonist makes sense. You are 100% correct.
I love it. That's a very true statement. And you're like, and like, even if it's just for a brief moment, you're watching it going, I can talk behind that.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's what makes an interesting character. I read a whole book when in between the sixth and seventh Harry Potter books. I read an entire book about Snape and whether he was like good or bad. Like, that's what makes it interesting. I read a book called The Great Snape Debate in between those books. And that's what makes like a good character when, you know,
relatable.
They're not all.
I think we lived together in Atlantic City when you read that. I remember that.
Yeah, it put because remember the whole thing was what side is Snape on, and this book presented arguments for like how it could go either way.
So funny. Yeah,
the conclusion.
That's the kind of nerd I was waiting for that last Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Reading.
So, in the movie, Jamie Foxx sings a song called "When I First Saw You," and
yeah, it's really beautiful. Even though he's a creep,
And when I first saw you, it's like Beyonce just modeling. It's kind of boring to me. Wait, I thought. So
was that, and he's just singing about how beautiful she is, basically.
The Jamie Foxx song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I can see.
Yeah, and then after that, we see Effie.
And then we see Effie. She's got a kid, and we see her in like a meeting with unemployment, and they're asking her if she's looked for work, and she's like, "No, I'm a singer. That's all I can do." And you know, no one's
still being a diva.
Right. She has not. I think I said this in my notes later, but it's evident here too. She has not been humbled at all by this experience.
Nope. You're right. You're right. And that was when we should have been feeling bad for her a little bit.
And then I kind of go, I wrote in my notes, I'm like, does her brother not check in on her? Or like,
well, then we find out that he's been sending her cash and she won't accept it.
Well, then during Patience, I write a note saying, okay, I take that back about the brother. Yeah.
So then we see them recording the song Patience, and it's like a really beautiful song. We kind of get the feeling that it was like a We Are the World.
And if it's not obvious, Effie's child is from Curtis. And Curtis does not know that this child exists.
Right.
Which,
because he hasn't seen her since, you know,
which parallels to Diana Ross. So Diana Ross and Berry Gordy were in a relationship. They never got married, but they were in a relationship from 1965, which is around the time the Supremes started, to 1971, when she gets married to another executive. And she's 2 months pregnant when she gets married. It is Berry Gordy's child that she is pregnant with, and the executive knew that, like knew what the deal was, like when they got married. I don't know if he knew she was pregnant. I don't know what that point is, but he basically knew right away when she was pregnant that it was Berry Gordy's child and raised it as his own. And the child themselves didn't know until they were like 13. They thought their father was their father, and they thought Berry Gordy was Uncle BB.
That sucks.
Yeah, so they never, but they were obviously in a relationship for like 6 years, but like kind of like how,
like Jimmy and Laurel.
Yeah, like Jimmy and Laurel, but like how him and Dina get married, and or how him and Effie have a child, and Berry Gordy didn't know that was his child.
Yeah.
Because he probably figured like, oh, she just got married. Like, that's probably like his child, like that you probably didn't realize.
Didn't even think to put the two together.
Yeah, until eventually, obviously, like he found out.
This is where we see Jimmy doing heroin. They're all trying to, like, Cece tries to talk to him. They're all kind of trying to tell him.
So him and Laurel sing this song Patience, which is a very Marvin Gaye, what's going on type of song.
Yeah, yeah, message song.
And they play it for Curtis at a Christmas party. and everybody loves it, but Curtis isn't into it.
And so then we see Jimmy take out the heroin and he's getting ready to shoot it up, and Cece's getting upset, and
Laurel runs out of the room. She can't even watch it.
Right. Laurel runs out and Cece tries to talk to him. And he just, Eddie Murphy just looks up at him.
There is so much.
I don't know how to describe it. It's the most like open.
I was trying to figure out how to describe what he's portraying in that, but there's so much.
I feel like he's just saying, I feel like it's like a, if you have something to say, I'll listen. But what can you say?
It's like, really, what can you say? That's going
to
change my
mind. You know what it kind of reminds me of, to compare it to another movie that we discussed on the podcast recently? In Empire Records, when Deb says, what are you going to fix me, Joe?
But this is even more. This
right.
Even
I mean, more. It's way better executed, but I feel like it's the same sentiment.
It's because he didn't say anything. It's because he didn't say anything. It's because he didn't move. He didn't throw an extra eyebrow in it.
He literally was still, but the look in his eyes. Mm-hmm.
The look said,
It wasn't. It was so many things that it wasn't anything. Like, I don't know what to.
It's like, I'm tired.
It was the monster
I'm
that
over you. It
was every monster.
It was every, yeah, every demon.
He deserved the Academy Award for
that look
moment.
You think about every emotion that anybody who decided, now this is like addict stuff. Because it's anybody that decided to pull it out and, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to use. I'm going to use the drug again right
now. Yeah, because this is Christmas at a party in front of people. Perfect. And before she leaves, Laurel is like, go, please, Jimmy, don't do it. It's Christmas.
It's clear that he swore off of it. He swore off of it. It blew everybody's mind and he pulled it out of his pocket. Like, whoa, wait.
And it was ready, like ready to go.
Ready to go. And it was like, please don't. And so like that look, you saw all the prior arguments. You saw the struggle to stop. You saw all the broken promises. You saw like the renewed promise. You saw
this was a whole group of people promise. Trying to convince Curtis that this song is good and worth putting out. And Curtis is like, well, it's not what I want. So no, it's not happening.
A whole heap of what's the use? What's the use? What's the use? Well, why? Mm-hmm. You saw right. You saw every addict excuse portrayed in this look. And anybody that's ever had someone try to take the thing out of their hand knows everything he said in that look. Because it's, you're not, if you've ever had anybody try to take the thing out of your hand, it is this whole like, you look at them like, you know I need this, you know, and you know the fight that's going to happen if you try to stop me right now.
Or just someone trying to convince you to feel a different way than you feel at that moment.
It's
when you truly feel that way, and it's hard when it's low and down, but like when someone, it's just like you can say whatever you want. It's just
you're not going to change me in that next sentence.
Yeah,
change me in that next sentence.
He almost looks like a child. Like, it's just so open, and there's no trace of any kind of like animosity towards Cece.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this.
It just, I mean, it pulled me up short. It was.
I noticed that too. There was no, aggression to it, confronting. Like, what are you going to say? Mm-hmm. Like, it was more like.
Well, it is. It was more like, not in that regard, but it was.
Not
like,
an aggressive way.
Like, what could you say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like,
what are you going to say?
Right. And this, if you really think you have something, I will listen.
Yeah. But. What do you got? What do you got that's going to be better than this?
It was a heap of, I tried, I failed, which is a huge addict struggle. Because even the trial to stop is part of the struggle. So him pulling it out, oh my God, that scene. Jesus, that scene. That was a great scene.
You know what I wrote in my notes about it? Jennifer Hudson could never.
You're awful.
You will make sure that everybody
in all of her dialogue in the entire movie, she did not make me feel as deeply as Eddie Murphy made me feel when he lifted his head and looked.
That was definitely the best acting moment of that whole movie.
That was good. That was some good acting. Take note.
And it's a shame he didn't win. It's a shame the movie wasn't at least nominated for Best Picture. If it was one of those 10 picture years, maybe that's one of the movies that made them change their minds to make it a 10 picture year again, which was the original way they had it. The original way was a 10 picture year. They would nominate 10 pictures. Look. And then for some reason they shortened it to 5 for a long time. And then I think it's because of this, there's just such a variety of things that come out. Now you got Netflix and Hulu and all these places coming out with content. Disney
now. So much. Yeah.
Yeah. And now that everybody's home, it's going to be interesting to see if it changes back again or not. Like if they're going to change it back to 5 or they're going to keep 10, considering not as much stuff has come out this year. And it'll be affecting the next probably 2, 3, 4 years to come of how many actually projects are coming out.
Yeah.
The rollout's going to be a lot different now. Yeah. In the coming years. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause a lot of things they pushed out, like, that was the old thing that I was worried that Wonder Woman wasn't going to be good because they've been holding on to it for so long that I was like, if this is good, I feel like they just release it and make their money. That's why I'm hoping Black Widow is a good movie, just because of female superhero. I want the movie to be good.
Here's the problem with female lead movies.
Tell us.
Yeah. Okay. I want everybody to shut up. Lean in real quick. Want everybody to understand that here's the problem with we're making a lead woman in this lead movie because it's a lead woman in this lead movie. Don't lean on it so hard.
Don't do it for the sake of doing it. Movies like that suck.
Look. Think about
that's like those sequels. That's like the fifth sequel. You're just doing it for the sake of doing it.
I don't know how much of like these other movies you've seen, but everybody loves Sigourney Weaver and Aliens.
Yes, they do.
Thing at all. We loved Ripley. Ripley was more badass than every Marine put together.
It's true. Yes. Ripley was very beloved. And the same thing with Linda Hamilton in Terminator.
Thank you. Yep. Linda Hamilton was strong. Linda Hamilton was in a psych ward of a crazy hospital, keeping her sanity together, working out, and waiting for the day to break out of there and go rescue her son because she knew she had to go like save the world. And she was strong the whole way. She was unrelenting. She was beautiful. She was strong. She was all this. She was badass. She bled, but it wasn't a thing. Even though maybe it should have been a thing. Maybe it should have been pointed at. We didn't point at it. We just loved the shit.
Yeah, they were saying, I just watched a YouTube video today where they said Batman, the first Batman by Tim Burton and Michael Keaton, Sylvester Stallone at the time complained and said it ruined action movies because you took real people who were really built and like, you believed could do these things and were strong, and you kind of changed it to people with superpowers or people with fake he's like, I wish I could wear a suit with fake muscles and not have to work out.
Two catches to that. That is the very catch with Bruce Wayne, is that he is human.
Yes. He's a vigilante. He's not a superhero. He's a vigilante.
He's the type of hero that is in a class of so trained and so extremely focused that he appears to be superhuman.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's one of the things that makes Batman so cool. Yeah, he's rich, but he's crafty, resourceful. So of course he's rich enough to be crazy and he's crazy.
So is Tony Stark.
The Joker always called him out on being, you have a split personality disorder. You've got this Bruce Wayne and look how you're dressed.
That was the joke in the first Batman, was like how so many of them talked about how crazy Bruce Wayne was.
Wayne is crazy. That's why I liked Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne, is that the idea of Bruce Wayne is that he's never, like Batman is never Bruce Wayne. There's never a time when he's like, hey,
I'm cruel and suave. Yeah.
Right. He was never that Christian Bale shit. Batman had to really try hard to go out in public. And so that's why he would even kind of still sometimes talk like this. And he was Bruce Wayne, still very matter of fact, still to the point. And this is what we're going to do with the shares in the company. And he would walk out the room and go finish being Batman. Like, I'll back on it. Like, good.
Move my body fully. This is how I prefer to be.
Yeah, exactly. Stallone has a nerve because he was one of, even though, his big action was Rocky. So yeah, he was a real person doing a real thing. But most of the action stars at that time weren't. They were Arnold Schwarzenegger's and they were Van Damme's.
Well, he was defending the Arnold Schwarzenegger's and Van Damme's.
The only action star I would defend out of that era as being a real person would be Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis in Die Hard, he was just this guy who got right. stuck in this situation.
He's the major everyman.
Exactly. Schwarzenegger, built to hell, always some trained SEAL who got stuck in some weird situation. Same with Van Damme, built, SEAL, trained, stuck in some situation. But this was like, Bruce Willis was just like, he was like an electrician. You know, like you almost recognize him. You know what I mean?
I was making that joke recently because if you think of it, a lot of action movies start out where like the guy is just like dad trying to get his kids off to school in the morning and like he's like the action star of like the whole movie. Like it's very like every like Brad Pitt in World War Z, like Tom Cruise has been like that in different movies, Will Smith in Independence Day. Yep. Like they're all like dads just trying to like, you know, get through the day. And
Bruce Willis in like the first Die Hard particularly, because they got a little Vin Diesel-ish towards the end, you know what I mean? They fell into that actions thing, but
that's what I mean. Like The Rock, they try to make an everyman, and I love The Rock, but he's not the guy I see in the corner.
No,
down the street from me.
Every man on earth who has that physique. They always had to write this backstory of like with him and Schwarzenegger, it was always like he's some ex something.
Right.
Physique.
Yeah, or he's in the army. He was in the Marines.
He works out for 4 or 7 hours a day, and that's why he looks like this and works in insurance. Like, no, that's not how it goes. But back to the women.
yeah, tell us about the women.
I think we've had strong female leads. We've had strong female heroines. Maybe the problem was that it wasn't pointed out. Maybe it blended in so well that we didn't even see it. And then like with some of the new, like with people complained about the Marvel Endgame or Infinity Wars, whatever. I forget about like, the titles, but everyone's mad.
They all like are starting to blend together.
Yeah, yeah. In Endgame, there's the shot of all the heroines staying together and they got the suits on and they're being powerful. But the women of Wakanda were strong anyway. Iron Man stories that Rescue started wearing her own suit. And it all happened anyway. Like, I don't know, when it's pointed at, it feels like the powers that be. This is what I feel about like some black only, particularly like Netflix has the category, representation matters. Have you seen that category in Netflix? I hate that category. If representation mattered, it would already be there and you wouldn't have to point at it. It would be in the blend of regular movies and suggestions and shit.
I wonder if they do that for people that are online going, Netflix doesn't have the core category that's just about representation.
It's totally marketing.
Because you know there would be that person at the same time.
Not only would it be that person, but since it's a thing, they're going to make it a thing for them. Since it's a thing out there right now, they're going to capitalize on the fact that people are looking for this.
Mm-hmm.
They'll aggregate all these ethnic movies and themed things into one section. But if they came up in regular search, then you don't have to do that. There would always be the defenders out there like flipping through their Netflix feed like, nah, my thing's totally diverse. It's largely based on what you pick. Maybe the reason why strong female heroines pops up in my Netflix feed is because I watch movies like Terminator, Aliens, where they're strong female leads, you know what I mean? And there's other movies. I'm always like ready with those two movies. So like, I don't like mm-hmm. it. You're in my mind. But
well, speaking of strong females, we see Marty with Effie again.
Oh yeah, because Effie goes to Marty's office.
Yeah, so he's trying to get her a job and she's still being a monster. This is where I wrote she has not been humbled at all by this experience.
Right.
He brings her to this club to audition and she doesn't want to do it because she doesn't want to perform with their accompanist. And he like lays it out for her. He's like, I have tried everywhere. This is it. Like, this is your last chance. You got to do this.
Well, that's it. This is the last.
Mm-hmm. And she sings I Am Changing. And I think she did a really good job singing this song.
Yeah, all of her singing is fine.
That's well, I mean, like, emoting and stuff too. Like, I thought she did because I was like paying attention.
Mm-hmm. She emotes just fine when she sings. That doesn't make her a triple threat.
I hate to say it. I really hate to say it, but like, really, Now that you mention it, Jess, I agree with you. The payoff just wasn't there because
we speak the same acting language.
Yeah.
No,
I agree. I was able to make you understand.
I thought she did a better job than I remembered. But I agree that it was very one note and there was no ups and downs, like ranges and heights and lows to it.
No nuance in there. I never thought that she was thinking anything.
You never saw her thinking on the line.
Yep.
Yeah. But that's what I said was my problem, was that like they made it seem like we should be like feel bad and like root for her on the second act. And I'm like, but like she was a bitch.
Yeah, I don't care about her.
I'm like, did I miss something?
She didn't win any goodwill with me in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Where even when she said, when she got to that club with Oogie Boogie, I like to just keep pointing out that the club owner was Oogie Boogie from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is that what that's what you're saying, Oogie Boogie? I thought you were just describing him that way. I was dying. I was like, what a reference.
Mr. Oogie Boogie. Yeah, even when she walks in and she's like, well, the babysitter was late, but she said it with that attitude.
Right. No humility.
It didn't feel like she was covering up how bad she felt, or didn't feel like she was covering up how
scared. It was obvious that like Marty made it clear that she's been,
as someone who has been late for things because of childcare issues, no one gives a shit about your kid.
Exactly.
You still have to show up and you have to apologize if you're late.
That's why we planned it last week.
Mm-hmm.
Be here and be there and
no one cares about your problems with your kids.
No, because if you make one, you have to be, I heard
as someone who literally lost my job over this exact thing, no one cares.
No, it's a shame. No one cares. No one cares. Mm-hmm. You got to be impeccable with your deadlines. Mm-hmm. You're impeccable with your deadlines because that is simply the way the world works. And we know people who are self-reliant, who don't hold themselves to their deadlines, they don't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And people who won't abide by the deadlines of others are late. They don't show, they don't come, let's do it tomorrow instead, next weekend, and we're still late, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's why we planned it so this could happen. So yeah, that's a big lesson. But we didn't see any of that like vulnerability in there. We didn't see her scared that she was late, you know?
Yeah, she's still acting like they should be grateful to have her there.
Where's my dress?
I did like her outfit when she got the job. She got like the turban.
Yeah, like she looked good.
Like the capri pants and dress combo thing. That was cool. Like,
the evolution of costumes was nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her looks.
I believe they were nominated for costumes for.
Yeah, they were. Oscars.
I remember like thinking about that, even as they were, like you said, as they were getting more fame and acclaim and getting more money, their costumes, the wigs.
Oh yeah, the costumes got better. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It also changed with the times. We saw denim. We saw the you know.
Yeah. All of their looks.
Rated up differently. Mm-hmm. Natural
makeup wise. I don't know at what point the movie this happens, but when Beyonce is finally breaking up with Curtis and she's leaving the house.
Yeah, I made a note about that.
Lace front. I saw the line where there was lace.
Oh, really?
Front. I just saw like a line and like obviously it's a wig she's wearing. Like obviously that's not like her casual hair. I can literally see where the wig is, like where the wig ends. But I was looking for it too.
So then we check back in with Jimmy and Laurel. We find out they've now been together for 6 years. He's been promising he's going to tell his wife about Laurel. Now his wife, was it eight? I only watched, she gave him six kisses.
It was so it was Rainbow Records' 10th anniversary concert that we go to. And they were together for at least 8. Because think about it, the minute they meet each other, they're already flirting.
Okay. So it's been a long time. And he's been promising he's going to tell his wife. I wrote 6 years, but you were probably paying closer attention than I was. And now Jimmy's wife is in the audience and Laurel's like getting mad because he's still not going to
break up with her.
Well, she says that he never really loved her because he never married after being together for 8 years. Like he obviously is complaining about his wife, doesn't want to be.
Yeah, she's not wrong.
And she said, I've been a wife for basically 8 years without being married.
Without being married, yeah. And now he comes on stage and now it's the mellow sounds of Jimmy Early. He's changed his tone, which reminded me of Matt. Have you ever watched the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
No.
Okay, you really should. I've been trying to get Siobhan to watch it with me. It's a musical comedy TV show. It's brilliant. It's on Netflix. I'm going to text you and remind you. I highly recommend. But this
when it was the Mellow Sounds of Jimmy Early, it made me laugh. There's a song like in a later season called Trapped in a Car with Someone You Don't Want to Be Trapped in a Car With. And the whole joke of the song is that, so it starts off like sounding like a Beach Boys, like an early Beach Boys song. It's like, you know, trapped in a car with someone you don't want to be trapped in a car with. And the joke is that the car ride is long that they go through all the stages of the Beach Boys career. So, and the, like the song like changes as they go through all like the different phrases.
Jessica, I will give you this challenge on the podcast.
What?
For every episode of a Bravo show I pick that you watch, I'll watch an episode of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
There you go.
Okay.
Show for show.
Yeah, I can do that. Mm-hmm. But Matt, you would really like it. And this reminded me of that. There's a part where they talk about like the later, more mellow stages of our career.
Yeah, so he sings
same like evolution. But Jimmy is spiraling. Like during this performance, he starts doing like all like the old, like Jimmy's like the more like soulful. He starts
singing to both his wife and his girlfriend, and both of them are understanding.
Right. They're singing to two people.
And then they started catching on, didn't they? They caught on.
Yeah, both his wife was like, are you talking like singing to someone else? And like the girlfriend already knows his wife is out there and like
right.
picks her out.
And then he, on television, drops his pants on stage.
Well, he stops the music and he says, he's like, I'm tired of singing these sad songs that Curtis has been making him sing against his will. And he starts freestyling, basically doing like a rap before rap is a thing. And Curtis isn't happy, but the crowd loves it.
Funky sound to it. I like how they did it. I could totally see it.
Did we think Jimmy wrote this before? Because it's very well written out, but then freestyling is a thing where people can freestyle and battle against each other and be amazing.
It comes out extremely musical. Like this is a impromptu chorus that is totally choreographed. You know what I mean? That's how I took it.
Maybe this is like one of the songs he and CC have been working on that Jimmy like wouldn't let him do.
That's very true.
Because it was just the way he started calling out direction. All right, I'm gonna say this, and then y'all come on in and then
boom. Well, but he still could have been working on it, and that band not know what the
beat I guess is. Musicians kind of coming together, like, all right, hold on, come here, boom, 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 and then it was like looking like, okay, all right, hold on. Like musicians do that; they do that,
right? Anyway.
So if they get the chance,
they're jamming.
Hey, I can see them. I can see that moment.
And this is on live TV though, so Curtis is furious.
And he's and Jimmy Early's eating it up. He's eating it up
because he's doing good. He's doing good.
He was reliving his glory days.
I couldn't tell how into it the crowd was, but were they into it?
I wrote in my notes that I felt like they were being very happy and they were eating it up.
Like they caught on. They were like shocked, but
His wife was shocked. That might be what you were thinking of. Because she was like, what the hell is he doing? Because he's going off script.
No, I think it seems like they're pretty much with him until he drops his pants.
Anyway. Well, yes, then he drops his pants and
And they cut the broadcast. And it's all kind of bananas. And he comes on stage and Curtis tells them that he made a fool of himself. And Laurel like agrees. She doesn't have his back at all. And she finally like breaks up with him. She like tells him it's over.
And Curtis fires him.
Yeah.
And then they sing that friggin' We Are a Family song again.
Yeah, which you could tell is like a huge hit that must be like their anthem.
Yeah. So then I got involved with cooking something for a second and I heard Judah, because Judah was home at this point, go, that guy looks like Jason Mraz. And I look back at the TV and I see John Krasinski, who I did not recall was in this movie because he wouldn't have been on my radar at the time.
That is amazing. That's what your son, A, knew who Jason Mraz was. B,
of course my son knows who Jason Mraz is.
C, also confused him from John Krasinski. He's your child. This is the most your child I've ever heard of.
But wait. But I missed who they were. Who were John Krasinski and John Lithgow? I was so excited to see them together in a scene.
Matt, would you like to take this?
Well, they were producers, right?
Correct.
And I was so happy. I was like, John Lithgow, wow.
Yeah, real actor.
He's another one when he pops up, I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah, I'm always happy to see him.
They were offering her the part to something. They didn't say it.
They made it seem like it was a indie, gritty type of movie. Something that would be very off-brand for her.
You know what I thought it was? As they were describing it, it made me think of Lady Sings the Blues. That's what it made me think of.
I was going to ask you if you watched that movie. Have you seen that movie?
Yes, I have. With Billy Dee Williams and Diana Ross? Yeah.
I just watched it for the first time this year. Like, literally within the last 6 months.
Oh, I haven't seen it in a lifetime.
Do you remember Richard Pryor is also in it?
I did not remember that. I remember Billy Dee Williams, Joe Pesci, right?
Joe Pesci's in it?
Billy, take the money! Take the money! Well, that's not Joe Pesci.
Yeah, I don't think that's Joe
Pesci. The nightclub owner who was like, who when she was singing her jazzy song and when everybody else was doing the booty shake and Billy Dee Williams was sliding her money,
she don't know.
Accept it. Who was that club owner?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up.
I gotta watch that now. I gotta watch
Richard Pryor is the piano player at the club and is the one that's the friend that gets killed because he gets her heroin. And remember, they come in at the room when it's just the two of them.
Oh.
Like, the guys come in looking for him because he, like, stiffed them with money or whatever. And he gets beat up and he dies.
It's a
huge part in the movie.
Well, I was a kid when I watched it, so I probably...
Oh.
Atlin, yeah, yeah.
Oh, Matt, you need to watch it again because Diana Ross is amazing in it. Jessica, yeah. You need to watch this movie. It's about Billie Holiday's life, and you see her as, like, a teenager and go through, like, her entire life. And she does such an amazing job even playing, like, a teenager.
Have you ever watched Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill? Dodger McDonald as Billie Holiday?
Mm-mm.
Oh, but I remember watching...
That's an important one.
What's it called?
Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. It's on Broadway HD. I'm not sure if it's anywhere else, but it would be worth getting whatever the free trial of Broadway HD is to watch it.
I remember watching Lady Sings the Blues, Lady Day at Emerson Bar. What?
At Emerson's Bar and Grill.
Play or musical?
It's the Billie Holiday play with Audra McDonald. You'll find
it. Oh, it's a play. Okay.
She won. Yeah, I mean, she sings in it, obviously, but it's technically a play. And she won the Tony Award for Best Actress in a play for it. And that's when she became the first performer to win all four acting Tonys.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Supporting and lead in musical and play. She's got all
first
four.
First performance, 1986.
I remember Billy Dee Williams was in it. And as I was watching it, I kept thinking, like, wow, this is why everybody loves Lando Calrissian from Star Wars. So I remember it. For some reason, it was just a big deal that he was in Star Wars. Maybe the black people it was. I don't know.
I literally just watched him New Year's Day. I never saw the third of the original Star Wars. I never saw it. So I just rewatched The Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back. That happened. Bob and I have been watching from chronological order because he's huge into Star Wars. And he's always loved Boba Fett. So Mandalorian this year, he's like literally cried multiple times. He's like a huge part of like this.
Oh, I know. I haven't. Okay. Well, go on. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so I just watched him as Lando on both of the movies because he's not in A New Hope. He's in the other two movies, both of them.
In Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm.
And he plays someone who is in charge.
Yeah.
When you meet him, he's like the one in charge of basically like everything.
This whole like cloud city, this like planet, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think that's like what also the deal was too. Like, obviously, everybody has to be beholden to Darth Vader and stuff, but he's the bad guy. You know, that's the point. Like, everybody, there's a, you know, antagonist. And also, he looks so cool in all this cape.
He does with that cape up.
We still have like a good chunk of this movie left to talk about, and it's almost 11:30.
Well, I was gonna say you reminded me of when Jamie Foxx was like talking about Cleopatra, and he said, "Look, this isn't a maid or some druggie or some whore."
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was about Lando Calrissian. It's like, here's a black guy in the movie, and his blackness didn't come up. It never got. Mm-hmm. He was just a person.
There's a million different species in Star Wars. That's the least that they could care about.
Literally, Satan was at the bar. So like seeing a black guy was no big deal. It didn't matter one way or the other what any like that part about him didn't matter. But he was like the head politician or seemingly like owner of this Cloud City. He was the man.
Yeah, he seemed like he was in charge of everything. Like in
charge of this shit. You know what I mean? And so like he made a deal with Vader to protect his little empire here. We knew him as the original captain of the Falcon. We knew like it was his ship and Hans got it. It's like he wasn't no.
Oh, and did you watch Solo? Not to interrupt you.
I didn't watch Solo. I didn't watch Solo because I don't want to know anything else about Han Solo. Han Solo comes. This is the problem with like this is the problem with Hollywood and movies and storytelling. You gotta appreciate the story for the story. At some point, you gotta appreciate story for story's sake. And we meet Han Solo at the perfect part of the story. We meet Han Solo when he's already has this like rogue history. We're not sure if he's a good guy, bad guy. We're not sure if he's in it for the long haul, if he's even on our side. We just know he's here right now getting Luke to the spot.
To be fair.
And so I didn't want to like, I don't want to know anything else about Han Solo.
His to be fair.
Based off of his mystique.
It's not like we meet him as a baby. We meet him where he's an adult. Look at you with your... we meet him as an adult and he's already has the rogue reputation that has already been established when we meet him in Solo. So if that's part of your thing being like, oh, well, it's taking away from the mystique is still there. The mystique is still, why is he here? Why, like, what happened to him? And you actually learn how he gets the last name Solo.
I didn't want to know that. I don't want to
know. You don't want to know that?
I don't want to know any of that. I don't even want to know why he's walking around with this fucking Sasquatch. I don't want to know any.
You don't want to know how they meet?
All I know is this rogue guy who is cooler than ice and smoother than when it's polished.
They did a good job casting.
Out of any situation. Charming, talks himself into a problem, talks himself right out of a problem. Has this Carillion freighter, has this ship that he and his buddy kind of modified to be able to do special shit. And he comes along and joins the fight in the rebellion. And I feel like he doesn't even know why he's sticking around. Even in Empire Strikes Back, he was only sticking around to get his ransom. He was like, look, princess, I'm trying to leave. Give me the keys. And she's like, look, here, take the money and run. And he's like, all right, fine. I'm gonna leave. Wait a minute. What's that on your shoulder? And then like he sticks around and ends up getting swept up in the adventure. And then falls in love with Leia. He
sticks around because he gets unfrozen.
But guys, I've never seen any of these movies and I'm getting tired.
Oh my God. All right.
As far as
it's gonna be past midnight when we're done.
It's just one of those things where like, sometimes I don't want to know all this backstory. A, I don't want to know all the backstory. And I wish all the stories in this universe didn't tie the hell together. They always tie together. And they're always part of the same universe. And that's why it's so-
Not me, my boyfriend. You guys would talk about and debate this for literally like days.
I would love a one-off story.
You guys would be good adversaries.
About something.
Anyway.
Anywho, Eddie Murphy rocked.
So Jimmy gets fired. He gets broken up with. Dream Sing family. Dina's having the meeting. I believe Dina, John Lithgow, and John Krasinski are what I think are producers, and I think John Krasinski was the writer of an.
Oh, okay.
That was a little more gritty. Now I would have to look back to see what the movie was about. I don't remember. You're thinking maybe it was Lady Sings the Blues. I thought it was Tulane Blacktop because they were talking about cars.
I was thinking Lady Sings the Blues because it sounded like she was a low class, kind of common, but like druggy. Like, if you ain't going down on a guy for this, we need to feel the scum. Again, it was like a Diana Ross parallel.
Yeah. Well, either way, you can see that Dina is ready to take control of her career. And she's doing this without Curtis's permission. She's by herself. And he even asked John Lithgow, like, is like, oh, I hear like he uses mob money to fund the Cleopatra movie. Is that true? Which I was like, that's a very bold thing for you to say.
You haven't seen that scene, Jess? You don't remember that one?
From the movie?
Yeah.
This is when I was involved with trying to cook while I was watching, and I stepped away at exactly the wrong moment because I came back just in time to be excited about John Krasinski and John Lithgow.
The tactics of that movie are, I mean, in that scene are awesome.
All right, maybe I'll just watch that scene again.
We learned that it's kind of common knowledge that Curtis is shady in the community.
Right, which of course it would be. He does so many shady things. You can't keep it all secret.
He hasn't been called out. And that's the other, it's a small circuit. So, you know, your peers in the industry are going to know your shit. That's why you have to be respectful.
Right.
It's the way he's saying it to Beyonce's character is that he's like, well, it's almost like he's revealing, like, look, you might not know some of this, or you might not know that people know this, but
that people know, right?
Keeps you on a tight leash. Are you even be able to do this movie?
Like, oh, yeah, he says that too. Yeah.
I think that was one of those, he was toying with it.
All right, I'll have to go back and watch that scene again.
Yeah, watch that.
I love some John Lithgow.
Oh, me too.
He was great. So the next scene is when
we see Cece and Curtis, and they're like arguing, they're having like creative differences about whatever the song is.
Well, he's upset with Curtis has done to his music. He has a different version of what his music is, and Curtis is like just doing whatever's popular.
Have you heard?
Right, which has been the thing the whole time.
Have you heard anybody like really argue against like difference between like funk, R&B, and disco?
Well, there's definitely differences, 100%.
Have you ever heard somebody take? Have you ever heard anybody argue that shit? Because people who hate disco hate disco. And I feel like that's what like Cece was trying to do. Like people who hate disco are like kind of people who are like, look, it's not music. It's this watered down, less than funk, less than pop, less than everything.
That's what they say about pop music sometimes too, is that it's not real, you know. But there's
people really hate pop music too.
There's a reason it's called pop. It's popular. People like it.
The version of that. People who hate disco, oh God, I love arguing with them. Just for argument's sake. Christina Sunshine Band. You're like, they're the worst.
As they're arguing about this, Laurel runs in screaming, and we find out that Jimmy is dead.
Yeah, from a heroin overdose.
They said he had been dead for over a day when somebody found him in his hotel room.
Which was relevant, and it makes Eddie Murphy's scene with the eyes even more like a bit more weight. Like it gave it retro weight. It was
amazing. Yeah, like I'm done. I'm over it. I'm tired.
And there's this like heartbreaking scene with Laurel where she's sobbing and she's saying she won't let me see him. Like I assume Jimmy's wife.
Marilyn Monroe.
She won't let me see him. She won't let me see my Jimmy. She's been like his companion all these years, and now when he dies, she's not the wife.
That happened to Marilyn Monroe. Johnny Hyde was the guy she was living with, and he wanted to marry her. He was already married. And she was like, well, no, because people will think I'm a gold digger. So he just stayed with his wife, but they were living together, and he died. And like literally within days, like she was like locked out of her own house with her own things because she wasn't the wife. Yeah. And she wasn't allowed to go to the funeral. She wasn't allowed to do anything, even though she was like technically his partner at that point. In paper, like he was still married, but he wasn't living with his wife. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to live with my wife like 5 days a week, and on the weekend I'm with like full time. I'm living.
They're like separated.
Everyone knows. Yeah, we're separated. Everyone knows that we're together. And she wasn't allowed. She had no right. Maybe she got, I think she was barred from the funeral, but she definitely didn't get any like respect.
Then we see Effie actually going to the wake. Her daughter says, what's a wake? And she says it's when some friends get together and show their love for someone. And Effie comes home and Cece is there, and her daughter doesn't even know who he is. Mm. She like literally looks at him and is like, who are you?
And Effie runs away from him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as she was like, she was trying to go up the steps, and the daughter was like, what's taking you so long? She's like, I'm old now. But she got down them steps in a heartbeat. Get out of there, yo.
doesn't Magic ask, like, oh, who is that? And he's like, that's your uncle, little girl.
She talked, was that Effie's father? That was Effie's father. For some reason, I had trouble placing who that guy was. But yeah, that was okay.
Because I remember Effie hugs an older man when she leaves to go on tour in the beginning of the movie. And so I took that as her father.
Her dad, that makes
now,
sense.
Now that's her father now.
So then we see them at the wake, and that's where we see Loretta Devine, and she sings, and it's wonderful. And then Cece tries to apologize to Effie for like everything, and she's like not hearing it.
Yeah, it didn't go well at that point.
She says, "I don't need you," and he says, "No, Effie, I need you."
Right, because he already
which all Effie really wants is her ego stroked anyway. So,
but what was cute was that Loretta Devine was like singing a song called, like, I don't know if it was called "Missing You," but like it was about missing someone and making amends. And that's when her brother walked in. As Cece walks into the club and sees Effie, and he asks if he can write her a hit song, and he says it's not her needing him because she's down on her luck. He needs her.
Yeah, to get back on top. You know what's crazy is I knew what Loretta Devine was singing about, but I didn't hear it. I didn't hear it at all. And I'm glad you said that. Incidentally, what I was going to say is I love when Loretta Devine sings. Like, that was the only thing I was thinking about. I was thinking about how glad I was that she was singing, because she has a really great voice.
It's like her in general. I just really like Loretta Devine.
She has such a sweet disposition on screen, you know? And I wish that either I wish I knew more about, or I wish her career her mainstream career had more singing in it. She's such a great singer. She has such a pretty speaking voice. Like, even when she talks, it's all way up here, you know? It's just
she should be like a Disney princess or something. Like, or some Disney character. Like,
certainly like the mom or sister character that helped save the day has their own song.
When I was watching the Tonys, it was like so crazy to see her be young, beautiful.
She was young, yeah.
Just like, and not that she's not beautiful now, but you know what I mean? Like, just like in her prime. Like, it was so crazy to see her as Laurel.
Yep. Yeah.
I just went and said goodnight to Judah. Sorry. And two things. Apparently he just started watching The Mandalorian and he really liked it. I was like, oh, I think Siobhan likes that.
Oh, I love that show. I can't.
I was like, we're doing the podcast, so I gotta go. And he goes, is this all on the podcast? And I was like, no, they can't hear you. But I said, I did tell them how you thought that guy looked like Jason Mraz. And Siobhan thought that was funny. He goes, it's not Jason Mraz. Oh, I was like, she's watched The Office. I was like, it's the guy from The Office. He was like, oh.
Regret sucks because you wish you had, like, regret is when you're standing at the should I, shouldn't I. Oblivion is didn't even know you had that option. And you look back like, wait a minute, I could have? Regret sucks because you can't forgive it. You wish you had done. But oblivion is like, I wish I had even seen. I wish I was awake enough to even pay attention. Yeah, oh, Jesus.
Don't even you know start. Who has a lot of regrets? Cece and Effie.
Because they went so long without seeing each other. To make up for
so
that.
He says he's got a hit song for her. She's just got to trust him.
Yeah. He writes a song called One Night Only.
It's beautiful.
It's more like a ballad. It's beautiful.
We see like a nice little montage of everyone listening to it, and you really get the sense that like it's something special. Like everyone's excited about it.
Yeah. I like when she says, come on, big boy, come on. But Curtis, he gets like almost like pissed off, is like, what? Effie tried to make a song the first time in like 10 years? Fuck her. I'm still in that song.
He's awful.
He's literally the worst. Like, literally, he has not checked in on Effie at all, obviously.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care. If he really wanted to know with all his power, he'd know he had a kid.
I think it was a power play. It was him. I felt like his motivation was simply to squash Effie.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
And keep her in her place.
Yep.
I agree. He was holding a grudge.
You'll never be nothing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was holding a grudge. Like, you can't, not without me. I need to be in charge.
Yep, not without me.
So he gives it to Dina, and they make a disco version out of it.
Becoming that which she hated in the first place.
Yeah, and you can kind of see her being like a gay icon at the same time when she was doing it.
Dina?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love the idea of that.
Yeah, because it was like all the like shirtless men that were dancing with her, and she seemed to be at like a Studio 54 type of place from like the pictures and whatnot I've seen during the heyday. It seemed like that's kind of like the mystique they were giving off.
It was all like fellas, but the ladies were more like get with whoever you want to get with. Yeah. I mean, like free, not free for all. I don't want to make it sound like that, but like freedom for all.
Yeah. So it becomes a hit, and we cut to Curtis and Dina having dinner, and it's like starting out real nice, but he basically lets her know in a creepy way that he knows all about the meeting with John Lithgow and John Krasinski.
Yes, he's super slimy about it.
But Dina stands by her choice in the movie. She said that's the movie she wants to do. You know, he tells her that.
Oh, you know what's funny? So you know how I like really missed a lot of the scene with John Krasinski and John Lithgow because I came to the very end. At this part in my notes, I wrote, so apparently Dina has been meeting with some movie people behind her.
Oh, Jessica.
You will.
Now I see that was a major plot point.
Yes. No, but she stand, and that's what I liked about Dina, was like her standing by her choice and being like, no, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And Curtis shades her by telling her that he picked her to sing lead because her voice has no personality except what
What she says that pisses him off enough to make him like go low like that. She says, like, in so many words that, like, he's not equipped to be her movie manager. She says, like, you know music, you're great at music, and they know movies.
Nicely, she said it.
She says it nicely, but what she says is, you're not equipped to do this for me, and that's what makes him hip-limbo.
I thought she said it, I felt like she said it with due respect.
She did.
It just, it cut his ego.
Exactly.
Without me.
I think she's also a little scared of him too, because like how he said at the end, like, I forgive you. Like, he's very,
that was so slimy.
The way,
that's why she kept it a secret.
The way she cowered, like not cowered, but recoiled. I was thinking it was going to go to an ugly place. Which it gave all the right impressions. So I guess that's a note on Beyonce's acting. Her recoiling implied everything it needed to. And I'm so glad we didn't see any of it. And I don't know if that's a thing. It's like, no, 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 you go there. But I think they went there the right amount.
I think she did a good job at establishing that she...
It could be some violence there, but...
That's what I'm saying. Beyonce, I don't know if she's gonna ever like win an Oscar, but Beyonce's a good actress. She did a good job.
Yeah, I think she did a good job as Dina and like portraying like that, like, oh, I, you know, I love this guy, but I'm a little like afraid.
Yeah, to like cherry pick a moment of like totally nailed it, it would be that she filled in all the blanks with the way she
pulled. I feel out. Like, yeah, I wonder if she's naturally like just a good actress, or if she, I mean, she's Beyonce, she probably had like an acting coach, like she probably worked hard at it, and it paid off. That's good.
Mormon. And after that is Listen, when she sings Listen, and he's in the recording studio while she's singing that. Yeah.
That song got big.
And so during this is like Dina like finds Effie's original song. She's like looking through Curtis's thing.
She goes through his desk,
Like, hey.
And she finds like the original vinyl and is like realizes that she did a cover of Effie's song.
Yeah, and I said, I knew Dina knew better than this. Dina is not slimy. That's why I don't think she was sleeping with Curtis when Effie was still around.
Yeah, I agree with that.
This was like a really crappy thing and she didn't know. And as soon as she did, she like did the right thing.
Yeah, and she calls Effie.
With like, now that you mention it, I think that payoff wasn't as strong. Like the reunion should have been more of a thing. Since we didn't see Effie grow as much as we saw Beyonce grow, it just, it wasn't, if like it felt like, again, she was just still like, now I'm getting my dress. Yeah, you've like totally changed my whole outlook on that movie. And like the whole way I perceived it. Just, with your suggestion. Yeah,
you know what the difference is? It reminds me of when you came to my Matt and Ben rehearsal. And I remember the girls were like obsessed with you. And they were telling, they liked when you told them when you're in a scene where you're like drying off with a towel, just use the towel. You don't have to like act like you're using the towel, right? And I feel like Beyonce just uses the towel, where Jennifer Hudson is like showing us that she's using a towel now.
Matt, what show of mine did you come to the rehearsal to? I feel like it wasn't a show Jessica was in.
As
Bees and Honey Drown, where the woman is like the steals the art.
Wow, yo, that was.
I was about to say, I'm like, I love that we all like call Matt Shell when we want to hear his opinion on acting in a show.
And I gave
like,
you
I did a show, like, and we you're did, a good like dress rehearsal set of for that. And I asked yeah. for if like I was like, oh, is it okay if my friend comes? Like he'll be like totally respectful and like whatever. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, like
you always sure. notice things that I haven't noticed.
That's the thing.
Was it as the winner is? I wonder. Was it the one where I played the stupid blonde?
Oh, I don't remember. I remember.
And that took place in a bar. Most of that took place in the bar. Had to do with acting. Had to do with the Oscars.
I think that was it.
That might have been it. That might have been more likely the one I brought you to.
I'm having trouble remembering like how many people were in there or like how many like.
It was small. It was like 5 or 6 of us.
That's about how much budget. And everybody was there. Not a whole lot of in and out, but everybody was like kind of already in the scene.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time in the bar because we were all together.
Ooh, I haven't remembered that in a long time.
Oh, well, that was a long time ago. That was like 10 years. That was probably like 8 to 10 years ago.
Now, they knew all that already. Like, it wasn't like this big leap that Dina had done, right?
No, I think they knew, but they just decided, like, they're not going to let him push her around. So they're going to throw this in his face now to keep him at bay.
Didn't spill the beans and, like, give him the info because she...
I didn't get that impression. I thought they all knew.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like when he confronted her, she was like, look, I didn't do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, they say they're gonna tell the feds all about the pay to play stuff and all of his other like shady business, how he was involved with the mob.
And all of this comes from evidence that Dina gave them.
Some of it came from Dina.
Because Dina goes through his desk and she finds a lot of the documents, and that's like when she finds the record. But yeah,
right. But so this was her plan to like escape him.
I thought a lot of that came from Cece. I couldn't tell if they were making that connection.
No, I mean some of it might have, but we actively see Dina going through Curtis's desk
and seeing. Well, yeah, and that's when we see the Effie the album.
The album, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Effie goes to see, or Dina goes to see Effie, and she says something about her daughter, and Dina goes, you have a baby? And she says, Magic's not exactly a baby anymore. She's almost 9 now. Yeah. And you see Beyonce very quickly put together that is Curtis's baby.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
and
Effie- that's about how long it's been.
Yeah, and so Curtis does like kind of walk in on them, but she doesn't tell them about the daughter, and Effie tells Curtis that he won't stop her from singing again and like releasing any music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then we see Dina at home and her mom is there.
Yeah. Well, Curtis walks in and is like, Dina, get your ass over here.
Bone-chilling moment. When they were meeting with Effie, and Effie like says whatever she says to him and she storms off, he looks at Dina and goes, I'll deal with you later.
Yeah. More of like hitting that, a lot of that ugly.
It's threatening, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a threat.
Threatening.
Yeah. And so like, she calls her mom.
Or her mother, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's why she calls her mom.
And when you said, Siobhan, that she was definitely wearing a wig at that point, I thought maybe it could have been like a choice. Could have been a choice to maybe have like a hidden wig line on this, you know, but only certain people would ever notice that anyway. So I don't know, maybe.
That's
she looks so pretty.
Like the
when like, off. Not that she looks prettier without makeup, but like she's so beautiful all the time. When her face is supposed to look like completely scrubbed, I was just thinking like, she's still so pretty. She's always pretty.
Yeah, so Dina basically leaves Curtis at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And she breaks out on her own, just like Dana Ross did with Berry Gordy.
Mm-hmm. And so we see that we're at Dina Jones and the Dream's farewell performance, and it's like a red carpet event.
Yeah, and Curtis comes with like his new act.
Yeah, tries to like introduce this girl, but they kind of like shut him down. So the Dreams perform with Michelle, and then when Dina goes, there aren't 3 Dreams, there's actually 4. People gasp like she just confessed to a murder.
Well, I figured it was the gays who knew what the truth were.
Maybe
that's it. Yeah, I'd be like the person's like, oh my god. I'd be the gasper.
I wrote in my notes before that, Dina says, like, I promised I'm not going to cry. I was like, Dina won't cry, but I will. Like, in the last few moments, just with, like, the three of them on stage, I was getting a little verklempt.
Yeah. And so she has Effie come out on stage, and Effie is singing to her daughter, who's in the audience, and Curtis is taking note that Effie is singing to this little girl. Mm-hmm. And, like, somehow magically makes, like, you know, the connection. I guess he sees her age and figures that out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of, like, dope to me, like, cheesy, like.
Yeah.
Give him a redeeming payoff kind of thing.
Which then I was like, are they going to get back together?
But enough to notice that he's got this, you know, that he made a child.
So he, like, comes out into, like, from his balcony, he comes into the audience and watches her as, like, they sing Dreamgirls, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how the movie ends, right?
And it ends. Yeah.
Yeah. Then it ends.
It's a really good movie. It's better than I remembered it being.
If we sound lethargic, it's midnight. just to let you guys know.
Agreed.
It was better than I remembered it being. I get sad.
It's such a good movie.
When I think about how great it could have been with a stronger actress playing Effie.
They literally auditioned, though, almost 800 women for it, Jessica. That was the best that they can come up with.
I know some of the other choices they had, and I don't agree.
Well, obviously, there was a reason they
went with the idea of Retta as Effie White in this movie is going to haunt me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I really want to see her audition tape.
What could have been?
You should tweet her and ask her.
Oh, yeah, you should.
Like, do you have your reel? Do you have your reel from 2006?
Yeah. And look up some stand-up with her. She's wearing, like, a denim shirt, another shirt inside, and jeans and shit. But
does she have, like, a Netflix special or anything that I can watch?
I don't know.
I feel like she does.
I don't know if she made anything stand-up recently. I just don't know.
I used to love the soundtrack. I listened to the soundtrack. Like, this is, like, a soundtrack I will, like, come back to on a random day. And, like, listen to. Because Eddie Murphy's great.
Eddie Murphy was great, yo. He was great in it.
It's Eddie Murphy songs, honestly. Like, I do like a lot of the Dreamette songs and the Dream songs. Like Move is a really fun one.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the, like, Fake Your Way to the Top, Step Into the Bad Side, Cadillac Car, they're, like, so fun to listen to. And they all the, you know, because you have Beyonce and Jennifer Hudson and singing back, though. It sounds awesome. Well, Matchell, where can we find you on the social medias?
You can find me on the social medias at Matchell IV, as in Roman numeral 4, all over YouTube. I'm, like, everywhere. I, like, own YouTube now. YouTube gives me so much money, it's out of control. They want me to be...
Are you serious?
No, that hasn't happened.
Oh. I was, like, so excited for you. I was like, that's amazing.
You know, like, they say you gotta speak it. No, it's my YouTube page. I got a couple of videos still up there. I haven't made anything recently, though. So, you know, go check me out. It's always worth a laugh.
Yeah. Make some you can check out the viral thank you to teachers.
Exactly.
Spring. That was a fun one.
Oh, it's the best. It's my favorite.
And it's still relevant. I still love educators.
It is.
Y'all do. It hasn't gotten any better. But everybody's doing their best. We're doing our best. But yeah. Go check me out there. I'm on, everything's on Instagram too. I'm on Facebook. You know, I'm like that guy. You know, so come check me out. You know what I'm saying? You know, visit me at my house.
That's awesome. Well, you can find me at Sia Monroe on Instagram and Twitter. Jessica?
Yeah, and you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at JessPausedPod.
And you can find our podcast at Totally Paused Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Honestly, you just search Totally Paused and you will find us. Like, it's so annoying having to explain the difference between our Instagram and our Twitter. Like, I'm not doing it. I refuse to do it anymore. No.
I've had
it. Okay. We rarely tweet. You're not really missing much if you don't follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, we really don't tweet that much. Matthew, thank you so much for coming
back.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing this.
Ladies, a pleasure. Anytime. I love this. I love you. I love you both.
I knew you'd have excellent insight into the show. Mm-hmm. I have good memories with you personally with the soundtrack. So I'm so happy you were here for it.
Me too. Me too. Coming as it does at the end of the season of giving, a brand new year to look forward to. Because you know what? Like, who's to say 2021 is going to be any better? Am I right? No, but.
But let's hope.
And it's the hope that keeps us going.
Yeah, we need hope. It's the hope that keeps going.
But yeah, and on that note,
and we're outie.
We're outie.
Peace.